Valentine's Day.
Would it bother you if I came as Tonks?
Rosie burst into Lupin's study without bothering to knock and flung herself down on a chair.
No. Do you want to come as Tonks?
Didn't you dress really slutty? I don't want to wear those old robes.
Right, Lupin commented cheerfully. You want a costume that will make William jealous.
Well, yes, if you must know,
Rosie replied threateningly.
Don't you dare tell him!
Lupin tried not to laugh at this.
Rosie, I'll be your secret keeper, I promise.
She smiled at him serenely and tucked her legs up beneath her.
Besides, it'll be more comfortable, she added airily. Shouldn't I wear a super tight weird sister's t-shirt and a short skirt and high heels?
The shirt and the skirt, Lupin said thoughtfully. Definitely not the heels. Nymphadora always wore black boots and colored fishnet tights. She had very nice legs, you know.
He finished apologetically.
Is that how you ended up having to marry her?
Rosie replied teasingly.
Possibly a contributing factor, Lupin replied dryly. That, and I'm an idiot.
You are not, Rosie protested in a scandalized tone. Don't say that.
I am when it comes to women, he replied gloomily. You've no idea, really.
Rosie remembered William telling her the same thing and decided to return to the original subject.
You're sure you won't care if I'm done up like her?
No. Teddy has a large photograph of her on his wall, and I've gotten accustomed to it. I boxed up some of the things for him.
He pointed his wand at the carpet, and a large rectangular trunk appeared, wildly painted in purple and pink and dotted with glowing stars.
That's a school trunk. See what you can find. There's some jewelry in there as well.
Let's practice turning my hair colors!
Rosie squealed excitedly and clapped her hands. And now I've become a beautician, Lupin thought to himself, as well as a fashion advisor. Sirius would be so proud. He sighed, and they spent the better part of an hour trying out various shades of pink and purple. When Quentin arrived at work at 10:30, he was unsurprised to find Beatrice behind her desk, glowering at him.
Can't you ever leave her alone? She snapped.
I can't say as I know what you're on about,
he informed her loftily.
Oh, please, Beatrice replied disgustedly. Your hair is all sticking up and your shirt is buttoned crookedly. Do you think I'm a moron?
Well, no,
Quentin began fixing the shirt with a rather embarrassed expression.
Anyway, it isn't always me. I've got this costume for the ball Solange is crazy about.
Well, don't be putting it on before work, then.
Suppose I shouldn't have, he replied dispassionately. But she said if I did, she'd show me her new shoes.
He gave her a wicked smirk, and she attempted unsuccessfully to frown.
Suppose I'll forgive you then, she said primly. What are you getting her for Valentine's Day?
Beatrice thought it odd that he hadn't sought her opinion, as he always had concerning gifts for Sammy.
Oh, for God's sake, Quentin barked out. Will you just fucking get back to work?
Beatrice made a dreadful face as he stomped into his office and slammed the door. Well, love hasn't changed him that much, she thought sourly. He's still the most annoying person in the entire world.
Don't I look good?
Timothy asked William cheerfully as he hopped into William's den, waving a Quidditch broom and sporting Slytherin green robes, his blonde hair parted straight down the middle and slicked back smartly.
Yeah, William admitted reluctantly.
Almost too good, he thought with a frown. He'd always thought there was something, well, the Muggles would have said odd, but it seemed almost familiar to him, different about Tim, and Malfoy's declarations had certainly been quite disconcerting.
"Would you get that fireboat?" he asked in surprise as he looked at the broom.
"Harry sent it to me,"
Tim replied happily.
"A real fireboat!"
"He just sent it to you," William said suspiciously. "You didn't ask him for one, did you?"
No, Timothy yelled back angrily. He sent it. I'll show you the letter.
He burst out of the room and reappeared in an astonishingly short period of time with a piece of parchment, which had obviously been reread about 1,000 times.
Tim, Ron and I thought you deserved a prize of sorts for bringing in Malfoy, and I figure you can practice on this. Gryffindor will need a new seeker next year, you know. Best of luck, Harry.
That's pretty cool, Tim, William admitted, and Timothy grinned as he pocketed the letter.
When another knock sounded on Lupin's study door, he shut the book he was reading and scowled at it. Apparently, every Muggle in the house was going to bother him today. 10 people had been by already to obtain his opinion on costume and character, and it was becoming rather tiresome. Besides that, he was quite interested in the 1,200-page Being of Epic Thoughts in Magical Theory postulated from the most learned wizards of the ages, leather tome borrowed from Neville.
What?
He snapped with uncharacteristic rudeness, and Victor staggered in and threw up in front of his desk.
Bloody hell, he snarled and threw down the book. It's 10 o'clock in the morning. Scorgify.
Victor flopped himself down on the couch and gave him an injured look.
You always told me about something, he whined. I was wondering if he had something for me he wears as a ball.
He finished with a loud hiccup.
Something that belonged to Sirius, Lupin said shortly.
Yeah, I'll shorten up some of his old robes and you can wear those, he replied grudgingly. And put a quill pen behind your ear. He used to do that and forget it was there. That isn't in the books and everyone who knew him will remember it.
Victor looked pleased with this.
Right, then. Elizabeth doesn't know who to be.
Well, why won't she come ask me?
He replied irritably, but Victor ignored this.
I told her she should be Bellatrix, he said with a nasty smile. She looks like her with that black hair and her boobs and all.
No one wants to see Bellatrix,
Lupin spat out wrathfully.
Especially myself and Harry. We were there when she killed Sirius. Do you remember?
Oh, yeah.
Victor obviously did not.
Well, who do you think, then? She's been hopping on it all day.
Lupin studied on this for a moment.
Well, there was a pretty Ravenclaw that favored her, a tall girl with long black hair. She was Narcissa Malfoy's best friend, Lucy Percival.
He picked up his quill pen and started scratching out a message on some parchment.
I'll put down what Elizabeth should wear and how to behave, and they'll remember her. Lucy Percival, 7th-year Ravenclaw prefect in the class ahead of me. Blue and black plaid short skirt, white button-down blouse, flats, sheer blue tights, oval-shaped red glasses, kind of a shy girl, bit clumsy, given to saying, oh my gosh, and clapping her hand over her mouth. And you can come ask me, you know. Now, will you please not try to be rat-faced drunk and vomit on my friends?
You're a bloody nag, Victor replied rudely. You can't tell me what to do, because you're my uncle. Everybody says I look older than you anyway,
he added triumphantly. Lupin smiled at this.
God, I hope so. I'm 10 years younger than you in Muggle years.
Victor shrugged.
Then you should be listening to me,
he pronounced gleefully. Lupin glanced at Victor, apparated him into the cellar, and picked his book back up with a satisfied expression. The next caller to arrive at Lupin's door, approximately 5 minutes after Victor's sudden departure, was Quentin, who immediately began pacing around the room.
What do you think? You sure?
He asked Lupin desperately and raked his hands through his hair. Lupin looked at him with a mixture of amusement and affection.
Yes, I'm sure, and I've told you 1,000 times,
he replied affably.
I'll take care of it. Do you trust me or not?
Of course I do. So you're telling me you're absolutely sure?
I've told you and told you. Go ride that bloody beast and calm down, will you?
Sure, thanks.
Quentin went out the door and Lupin put away the book.
Why don't you just ask yourself?
Rosie replied with a baffled expression when Lupin apparated into a recording studio to beg a favor.
Too suspicious, he said dismissively. It needs to be you. Get back to me by lunchtime, will you?
I guess, she responded sulkily. I don't suppose you're going to tell me what this is all about.
I guess you'll find out later,
he replied mysteriously.
Mum!
Rosie called out as she knocked on the guest room door next to Quentin's bedroom, which had been turned into a study for Solange.
Rosie!
Solange looked up from her keyboard and beamed.
Oh, I'm glad you're here. I want to break.
When they settled on her settee, Solange put her feet up and closed her eyes.
What are you up to, darling? Oh, working in the studio,
Rosie yawned.
I thought I might remake an old song or something.
Can you do that?
After the copyright's out,
she replied casually.
You know, speaking of old songs, did you and Dad have one?
Solange sat up with an excited expression. Here we go, Rosie thought and stifled a giggle. Solange loved telling stories about herself and Quentin, usually imparting much more information than Rosie wanted to know.
Oh, of course we do, she sighed happily. It was so romantic. After we told each other how we felt, we used to sneak off and go riding, or walking around the woods, or on a picnic.
Don't tell me about any snogging,
Rosie shuddered.
There wasn't any snogging,
Solange replied firmly.
Well, not at first, anyway. I felt really bad about Loretta. It was awful, she intoned dramatically. I knew I loved him the minute I saw him, but I felt so guilty, even though they never even slept together. It was horrible,
she added direly.
That is horrible,
Rosie said sympathetically.
So tell me about the song. Well, we went on a picnic with a bottle of wine and this old radio one day. It was October, but really warm. And I said something about how pretty the leaves were on the trees. And Quentin said he hadn't noticed.
A dreamy look fell across her face.
Because he couldn't quit looking at me,
she sighed.
He was so cute, Rosie. I just leaned over and kissed him.
She smiled reminiscently.
And then this old Joe Cocker song came on the radio. You know, You Are So Beautiful.
Rosie grimaced.
Yeah, it's that guy with the really gravelly voice, like he smokes 6 packs of cigarettes a day.
Yes, Solange squealed joyfully. We stayed out there all afternoon snogging, and it was so great, till we went into dinner, she frowned. Mum and Dad were furious because we were both late. I know that's when Dad started suspecting something. And of course Elizabeth had to announce I had leaves in my hair, she added irritably, and Rosie stifled a laugh. Afterwards, I always thought of that as our song, because it was our first kiss. So, this went on for a few months, and I know I was driving him crazy. But he came back to Paris. Okay, okay, Rosie sprang up hastily. I don't want to hear about that.
I got what I came for, she thought smugly, and I'll be able to get back to Lupin before noon. Saturday morning dawned bright and clear, and the Mansionites all arose early to make last-minute adjustments to costumes and practice staying in character. Breakfast turned out to be a meeting of sorts about the ball, with Lupin presiding.
Now, he told them all firmly, no one expects anything but a party, so even if you don't do your character very well, it isn't a problem. Just be polite, will you? Most of our invitees are my friends.
He gave Kenny a particularly warning look, and Kenny smiled back at him happily.
No problem, dude, he burst out cheerfully. They're gonna love me, man. Anyway, Lupin continued, if you do stay in character, they'll find it most entertaining. If anyone wants to do any last-minute work on it, I'm available until noon. After that, William and I will be transforming the great room.
There was a great deal of excited buzz and clapping. The first guest arrived punctually at 6 in the evening. Quinn had dismissed MacDonald from his duties, as he certainly didn't fit in with the theme, and was acting as doorman himself, something Lupin had insisted upon, stating Quinn had his character down better than anyone else, owing to a few hours of practice and a natural proclivity for sarcasm, inscrutable expressions, and the ability to frighten people. When he opened the door, he was rather startled at the size of the looming figure of Hagrid, dressed in his best orange hairy cloak, beaming and waving a bottle of Dilweed's dragon's blood in each hand.
Good to see ya! Good to see ya! Great look, I couldn't be looking more like old Snape! Rubeus Hagrid, at your service!
I see you've brought your own refreshments, Quentin drawled out in a haughty manner. I believe you killed that coat in the forest.
Oh, perfect! Hagrid roared and shouted with laughter, clapping Quentin on the back so enthusiastically he almost knocked him over.
Quentin shook his hand and cast aside Snape for the moment.
Quentin Quilla, you're from round Sky, then.
Hi! How do you know?
Didn't we Highlanders always know one another? Sure, I'm from North Keswick. Been to Sky a time or two, he replied cheerfully in his Scottish brogue.
And Hagrid beamed even more enthusiastically and appeared on the verge of embracing him. Quinton was saved from the definite possibility of multiple rib fractures when a great screeching of brakes was heard and the Weasley's enchanted car rammed itself through the front porch, stopping inches short of the doorway. Quentin, who had thrown himself several feet to the side to avoid being flattened, got up and dusted himself off as a round-faced, red-headed woman leapt out of the car and began shrieking.
Arthur, look what you've done! You've hit their porch! I told you and told you we should use flu powder!
Nice one, Dad, announced a tall and sturdy-looking man with a badly disfigured face as he jumped out of the car smiling and held out a hand for a stunning blonde who was looking at her dress with a dreadful frown.
This is horrible, Arthur. I've wrinkled my dress.
Bill and Fleur Weasley, Quentin thought to himself, although he didn't feel the astonishment Rosie had when she'd first seen Lupin. He had heard about these people long before they became characters in a book. Arthur struggled out of the driver's side, red-faced and sweating.
Why, Arthur, Quentin said in a voice dripping with sarcasm, quite an ingenious way to arrive, the head of Muggle Affairs crashing a Muggle party.
In the darkness, where his features were not easily discernible, he really looked like Snape, and Arthur jumped visibly when he spoke.
Merlin's beard, he declared dramatically. I thought it was actually him. Scared me to death, he added happily and began looking with poorly disguised curiosity in all directions.
Bill cleared his throat loudly.
What? His father asked him irritably, and Bill pointed to the porch.
Think you might fix it for him?
Oh, certainly, certainly, Arthur beamed. Sorry about that. Haven't ever been to a Muggle party before. This house is amazing.
He wandered a few feet away and began examining one of the lawn ornaments, and Bill looked at Quentin and shook his head apologetically and pointed a wand at the porch.
Reparo, he announced irritably. Sorry about that. This is Dad's dream come true. Bill Weasley, we've corresponded by owl.
He gave Quentin a firm handshake, and Quentin decided he liked this fellow.
This is my wife, Fleur.
Fleur was pouting very prettily, but dipped into a bit of a graceful curtsy and greeted him very politely. Molly introduced herself and shouted over at Arthur, who hurried back over and stared up at the house.
"You muggles certainly know how to live," he yelled excitedly. "And to think this house was built without any magic. Astonishing!"
"And to think, you almost knocked it down," a lanky red-headed fellow with long hair in his eyes said pleasantly as he sauntered around the car, his hands shoved in his pockets.
Two other red-headed men exited the back seat behind him, followed by a pretty girl with long copper tresses. Quentin examined the three and recognized Percy and decided the one who had spoken must be George, whom Lupin had told him was the best-looking of the Weasley boys.
"And what have you brought from the store, George?" he demanded and stared down at him malevolently.
George put on an innocent and injured expression.
"Who, me? Nothing."
"Turn out your pockets," Quentin bellowed,
and he sounded so thunderously Snape-like that George, quite certain he was 14 years old again, hastily did so. Several leaping licorice lust lollipops, half a dozen puking pastilles, and about 30 pounds of fireworks fell onto the grass.
"George!"
Molly screamed and whacked him across the head with what apparently was her idea of an attractive muggle pocketbook, a crocodile-skinned green monstrosity with thousands of silver buckles.
"Ow!" George yelled irately. "No need to bloody my face, woman!"
"You're scaring me," Ginny told Quentin happily. "I feel like I'm back in potions and I'm going to get detentions."
She was a pretty spunky girl who looked quite attractive in a tight brown corduroy skirt and v-necked black sweater. Rosie's going to hate her, Quentin thought immediately.
"We thought since you were all dressing as us, we'd dress up as muggles,"
Ginny announced proudly.
"And that explains it."
Arthur was wearing an old man's baggy red bathing trunks, on top of white sweatpants, a pink velvet blazer, and high-top tennis shoes. And Molly's outfit was actually worse, an orange-striped poncho paired with plaid polyester gaucho pants, purple leg warmers, and Mary Jane clogs. The boys, like Ginny, had done much better, except for Percy, whose purple velvet suit and platform shoes made Quentin think of Alfred during the disco era.
"We're quite honored," Quentin replied mockingly.
"I do apologize about the porch," Arthur mumbled with a red face, and Quentin felt too badly for him to remain in character any longer.
"No problem," he replied politely and introduced himself. "I think you all will fit in quite well here. I suppose Remus has told you that."
"Well, yes, certainly he did," Arthur smiled happily. "These are my sons, Charlie and Percy."
Charlie shook Quentin's hand with his thickly calloused one and grinned a bit sheepishly, and Percy gave him a very formal bow.
"Quite honored to be invited here once again. I say, I've been here before, you know,"
he pronounced triumphantly to the rest of his family, and every single one of them gave him a disgusted look.
"Lovely house. I've been thinking of buying, you know, now that I've been made head of the Department of Transfiguration."
"Shut it!" George and Charlie shouted, and Fleur waved her hand dismissively in his direction.
"He's so puffed up with himself," she told Quentin loudly. "It is embarrassing to have to go about with him," she added heatedly. "Ben George charmed his office door shut so he could not come. It was the unbreakable lock," she said disgustedly. "We do not know how he got out."
She glanced over at Percy, who was smiling smugly and admiring his purple velvet blazer.
"I transfigured the door into a walking stick and climbed right over it," he declaimed, and Quentin couldn't stop smiling. "There's a reason I was head boy and got top marks for Gryffindor."
Percy immediately stopped talking, since his family and Quentin had all entered the house and closed the door behind them. Several hours later, the party was in full swing. There was general agreement that Lupin and William had outdone themselves with the Great Room. It was four times its normal size, with a starry night sky for a ceiling, a moss-covered floor strewn an inch thick with rose petals, and dozens of rose bushes with minuscule fairies blinking within scattered about the room. A dozen golden cupids floated gracefully through the air, playing harps over round tables, bedecked with exquisite red jacquard linen and topped with pale pink, gilt-rimmed china plates, gorgeously hand-painted with pastoral scenes, and placed on dazzling silver chargers, a multitude of slender ivory candles and scores of tiny pink lanterns swaying about 10 feet above. A long table stacked with butterbeer, fire whiskey, magical chocolate, and assorted treats of both the muggle and wizard variety had been set up against the wall, and house elves teamed about busily refilling glasses and restocking plates. Red velvet loved seats adorned with plush pinked oversized pillows were scattered about here and there, some out in the open and some behind rose bushes for those seeking privacy. "This is the most romantic party ever," Rosie thought sulkily to herself. "It sucks." She was the only one that did not seem to be having a good time, although she had enjoyed having her costume admired. William, however, had stayed on the other side of the room chatting with George and Ginny since their arrival, and Rosie found it quite infuriating to see him in actual wizard gear. His old Gryffindor robes and tie, Lupin's prefect badge, and a copy of the Marauder's map in his hand, his hair lengthened 7 inches and tied back with a red and gold striped ribbon, something he had never bothered to do for her, she thought angrily. William, who had decided he was going to enjoy himself whether Rosie was mad at him or not, had helped himself to several pieces of chocolate, 3 glasses of fire whiskey, and was having an excellent time.
"Is that Trelawney?"
Ginny screeched in horror, and William and George looked over at the dance floor. Sybil Trelawney, bangles, beads, and scarves flying, was dancing in a dramatic, swaying fashion with Richard, who apparently had partaken of the fire whiskey as well, since he appeared quite cheerful and hadn't glared at Lupin once. "Who invited her?" William said in a disgusted voice. "It wasn't me." "Who knows?" George replied carelessly. "But half these people weren't invited. But Dad told everybody at the ministry today," he nodded sagely. "Probably invited half the people that work there. Maybe Shacklebolt will come," he added hopefully. "I know he and that Snape fellow would get into it."
"Yeah," Ginny said vociferously. "And Ron would have been talking about it at Hogwarts today. Did you invite Neville?"
William looked embarrassed at this.
Well, I don't exactly remember him," he muttered lamely. "I mean, he wasn't in my year."
"No, but he remembers Neville,"
Ginny sighed, but did not seem particularly bothered.
"I bet he'd hate it anyway. Why are Hermione and Ron late?"
"Sulky Pratt had to take Kilda to the baby minder," George yawned, and Ginny shuddered.
"You just be glad they're not bringing her," she informed William sternly. "She's the worst baby ever. Ever, and she's hideously ugly. I can't believe I have a niece that looks like that."
"Yeah, she's ugly as shit," George agreed affably. "She looks like the back of Ron's ass. Hey, maybe Trelawney will do some predictions for us," he intoned direly.
"Oh, that'd be good," Ginny enthused. "I know she's pissed that I'm still alive. She said I was going to die by fire before I was 20.
"I was meant to be run over by a bus within my 14th year," George announced dramatically. "Hey, Ginny, I don't think I ever told you this. William, remember, he was there. She told Fred he needed to watch out for nooses and ropes because he was meant to end up strangled before 16. So he wrapped his tie around his neck and fell out on the floor and made these god-awful gagging noises. Poor old Sybil started running around the room screaming and bawling," he added cheerfully, and Ginny shrieked with laughter.
"It was excellent," William told Ginny cheerfully. "She kept shrieking for someone to go after Madame Pomfrey, but we all just crowded around him and George shouted out that he was choked to death and already dead. Oh, Dumbles had to come in and calm her down," George added, grinning. "Strike a whole bottle of sherry in like 5 seconds. Me and Fred got 7 detentions apiece, but it was definitely worth it."
"That would have made a great story for the book,"
Ginny told her brother angrily.
"Well, you couldn't have put all the Fred and George stories in the books, Ginny," William said knowledgeably. "That would have been a whole other series of books themselves."
"Yeah,
where's our books?" George demanded lazily. "Call this partying and get to work."
Ginny rolled her eyes at him.
"Look, it's Lockhart,"
George yelled out delightedly as Henry strolled by.
"Not bad," he commented appreciatively,
and kindly conjured up a few Cornish pixies to circle around Henry's head. Henry, whose golden blonde hair was sculpted into the dreadful Gilderoy hairdo, was wearing the cornflower blue robes Lockhart had favored, and proudly clutching a copy of Magical Me. As expected, he kept in character quite well, mincing haughtily about the room while offering up autographs with a peacock-plumed quill, and introducing himself as
Gilderoy Lockhart, Order of Merlin, 3rd class, honorary member of the Dark Force Defense League, and 5-time winner of Witches Weekly's Most Charming Smile Award.
Molly Weasley trailed behind him, looking entranced.
"Oh, look at Mum, that is disgusting," Ginny announced with a revolted face. "Dad's going to be pissed."
"No, he won't," George replied amiably. "He's trying to talk to that Snape fellow into letting him take his television apart."
All three of them shook their heads sadly.
"Should we tell him he won't ever get it back together?" George asked William,
who glanced over at Quentin and grinned to himself.
"Nah," he replied wickedly. "He'll find out soon enough."
Lupin, who had been so busy dressing everyone he had found no time to worry about himself, had decided William could portray himself as a boy, and he would just be himself in the present, which involved nothing more than putting on his Black Auror's robes, wearing his phoenix sword, and carrying around a Death Eater head that looked suspiciously like Malfoy. As he wandered about the room chatting, he kept a watchful eye on the Mansionites, Kenny in particular, while trying to make sure everyone was having a good time. He knew Rosie was unhappy, but she'd refused to come out of the kitchen, where she was sitting by herself drinking fire whiskey, and was disgusted but not unsurprised to find Victor extremely drunk and snogging Rita Skeeter on one of the red velvet love seats.
"Your wife is here, this party,"
he snarled at Victor when he walked past them, and Rita stuck her tongue out at him.
"Do you give a damn about that?"
"He can go off with his wife, then,"
Rita told Lupin saucily,
"and you can come down here on this couch and kiss me."
Lupin gave her a horrified look and hurried away, but unfortunately not quickly enough to hear her whisper,
"We did it once when it was 2 days before full moon,"
in a smug voice to Victor. He was surprised to come across Elizabeth, dressed exactly as he'd suggested, sitting alone on a hidden love seat, staring disconsolately into a small fire. She startled and flushed when she saw him, and despite the stab of pain he always felt by this, he sat down beside her.
"You've done it perfectly. Has anyone recognized you?"
he asked her seriously, and Elizabeth smiled politely, but did not look him in the eye.
"Oh, yes. Arthur Weasley and Hagrid, Trelawney and Flitwick, they were all terribly impressed. I felt a little silly dressed up like a schoolgirl, though,"
she sighed.
"Mother said I looked very foolish."
Lupin frowned at this.
"She's just jealous because she can't wear a short skirt anymore."
He was actually trying very hard not to stare at Elizabeth's legs, which were long and quite shapely. He found the sheer blue stockings with a blue seam up the back incredibly sexy, and kept telling himself sternly to quit looking at them.
"Anyway," he added truthfully, "neither you nor Solange looks a day over 25.
"Oh, please. Solange, maybe."
"I'm telling you the truth,"
he said stubbornly. He really wasn't exaggerating. Elizabeth, whose youthful English rose complexion shone with a dewy sort of loveliness, had her thick black hair down in loose waves past her shoulders, and with the schoolgirl costume, she looked almost impossibly young and beautiful. "There is no one anywhere more beautiful than you," Lupin thought to himself. "Why in hell did I move in here? It's like the Cruciatus curse."
"What?"
Elizabeth said sternly as her eyes finally met his.
"I could tell you," he replied casually, "but then you might hit me."
"I wouldn't do that,"
Elizabeth said primly.
"You'd probably like it."
Lupin grinned at this.
"Well, you're right about that. Why are you sitting here by yourself?"
"Well,"
she gave him an embarrassed look,
"I don't know. I always feel kind of uncomfortable in a big crowd."
"Come round with me," he said firmly. "I'll introduce you to some people."
"That's all right,"
she flushed and twisted a lock of hair nervously around her finger.
"I guess I'm being antisocial."
"Good,"
he replied readily.
"So am I. We can be antisocial together."
"I think that's a contradiction in terms,"
she countered in her practical voice.
"Not if we're hiding out from a crowd together,"
he whispered conspiratorially.
"And why are we hiding?"
she said calmly.
"So I can look at you without anyone bothering me,"
he blurted out before he could stop himself. Elizabeth looked embarrassed and then pleased at this, and Lupin found himself leaning closer to her on the couch to breathe in her scent. Jasmine and honeysuckle, just a touch of musk, nothing like it. He smiled to himself.
"What now?"
Elizabeth asked curiously.
"During the First War,"
he replied sheepishly.
"Sirius and I were out in the woods. I kept going on about you so much, he finally yelled, 'That's it, I'm going to join Voldemort, anything to get away from you.'"
"That was very rude of him,"
Elizabeth replied sweetly, but her eyes were dancing.
"Well, it really was,"
Lupin said in an offended tone.
"Not that it bothered me, though. I just kept right on talking."
"What the hell are you doing? Quit flirting with her! Get up off this couch!"
"Is this your Aurora's outfit?"
Elizabeth asked him slyly with a tilt of her head.
"Well, yeah,"
he replied with some embarrassment.
"I couldn't think of anything else."
"I like it,"
she said definitively. Her mood seemed to have changed rather dramatically.
"Especially the sword,"
she added merrily.
"Well, maybe I'll wear it to breakfast then,"
he mused.
"Except Kenny would keep grabbing it and shouting, 'Hey, dude, I want to play with that sword, man,'"
he finished in an impressively authentic, sullen Kenny voice. Elizabeth burst out laughing and then gave him an apprehensive look.
"What if you trip and fall on it? It looks awfully sharp."
Lupin tried very hard not to smile at this.
"I haven't yet,"
he replied.
"I suppose there's always a first, though."
"You were never clumsy,"
Elizabeth said reprovingly.
"I remember you showing off by walking on this rolling log in the park."
"I remember you telling me for 45 minutes about a new dress you'd gotten for a very formal party,"
he replied promptly.
"This recitation was actually quite impressive."
Elizabeth giggled, her cheeks pink.
I kept thinking, how much more could she say about a dress, in a kind of astonished way, you know, because I was perfectly happy to hear it. I could tell you right now all about that dress,
Lupin said emphatically and put on a dramatic air.
It was made of ecru crepe de chine, therein followed by a lengthy explanation about the difference between ecru and cream, and edged with a broad box-pleated trimming of lavender silk, which was not the same colour as purple, absolutely not. And there was a wide sash of...
Stop that! Elizabeth said loudly, although she was laughing so hard she wiped tears from her eyes.
I can't believe you remember all that. You must have thought I was awfully stuck on myself.
No, Lupin replied thoughtfully. I thought perhaps no one listened much to what you had to say.
There was a sudden burst of fireworks, and puking pastilles, leaping licorice lust lollipops, and pink confetti all rained down from the ceiling in a great shower.
Don't eat that,
Lupin said hastily as Elizabeth picked up a puking pastille. They were enchanted to look quite tempting. She glanced at him and tossed it aside, snatching up a red lollipop instead.
Tell her not to eat it, he told himself frantically. Tell her not to eat it. Tell her not to eat it, you scheming, conniving, godforsaken son of a bitch.
Elizabeth, don't eat that, he blurted out, but sounded quite unconvincing. And Elizabeth just made a face at him and unwrapped it with a delighted expression.
It's cherry flavored. It looks really good,
she replied stubbornly.
Well, they're enchanted to look that way,
Lupin said in a desperate voice. They are. They... Elizabeth popped the lollipop into her mouth, and Lupin buried his face in his hands.
Whatever is wrong,
she said provocatively, and scooted herself closer to him.
Nothing. Just trying to save myself.
It isn't helping, he thought desperately. I can smell her. He had always been able to pick up on anyone's scent, even if they were 100 yards away and had just bathed, a lycanthropic trait that had certainly saved his life on a dozen occasions, since it was nearly impossible to sneak up on him, but it was definitely not a good thing now.
I don't think it's near full moon,
Elizabeth said coyly as her eyes lingered on his mouth.
Why shouldn't you be able to behave yourself?
It doesn't have to be near full moon, Elizabeth. I'm still male every other day of the month,
he replied wryly. Elizabeth sighed in a blissful sort of way.
I know that,
she said archly and put her hand on his knee.
Now, you open your eyes. Why are they shut?
I'm not looking at you,
he replied resolutely.
You open them up,
she demanded.
Open them up, or I'll sit on your lap.
Oh my God, he thought despairingly, but opened his eyes. I can't take this. Elizabeth was leaning back on the couch, apparently intent on showing him just how much she was enjoying licking the lollipop. Holy fucking shit, don't look at that! This did no good whatsoever, since he merely averted his eyes from her mouth and tongue to the legs she had just stretched across his lap.
It's awfully hot in here,
she said sweetly as she unbuttoned the top 5 buttons of her white blouse, exposing a breathtaking view of ample cleavage and an inch of pale peach lace from a low-cut brassiere. I'm going to fucking kill you, George, he thought furiously. You are going to die a slow and very painful death. His heart was pounding into his ears. You don't take advantage of someone who's under an enchantment. It's in the Gryffindor Code of Honor. And you know it's wrong. She's married. Married! Even if he is a drunk, cheating asshole I need to kill along with George. She will be utterly horrified with herself tomorrow, and you already make her uncomfortable as it is. You will not. You will not. You bloody well will not. Elizabeth gazed directly into his eyes and took another slow and deliberate lick off of the lollipop. I love this lollipop, she thought ecstatically. She never felt so boldly uninhibited or desirable in her entire life, and Lupin was staring at her with a positively feral look in his eyes.
Don't you remember how hot it was,
she purred throatily,
that afternoon when we were doing it.
Lupin sprang on her, pinning her beneath him on the couch, and Elizabeth squealed delightedly and squirmed until her short skirt had ridden up nearly around her waist. The black Auror's robes effectively hid their bodies from view, not that she really cared, and when he slid his hands up her calves to her thighs, she moaned loudly and bit his neck. A horrible screeching sound reverberated directly above them. Lupin thought for a moment he was back at school, when McGonagall had caught him shagging Narcissa in a broom closet. Lady Fanshawe, dressed as Minerva, complete with bun, square glasses, dour expression, emerald green robes, and tall pointy hat, had come around the bush. Elizabeth! Remus! What is going on here? She shrieked in a voice of utter horror and disbelief.
Mind your own business, he shouted back.
Oh, how could you?
She wailed and began sniffling loudly, and immediately Timothy and Teddy, attracted by the loud shouting, hurtled around the corner.
Dad! bed!
Teddy announced happily.
Why are you and Aunt Elizabeth sleeping on that couch? It's a party!
Timothy gave him a disgusted look.
They're not sleeping, he said and made a horrible face at his grandmother. And he's not your boyfriend, grandmother. You're really old. Rosie says it's disgusting how you act around him. Why don't you let him alone?
Lady Fanshawe turned a shade of red that was almost purple and stomped off with a mortified expression.
Come on, Teddy,
Timothy said irritably and tugged at his sleeve.
Grown-ups get totally pissed off if you bother them when they're trying to shag. Really? Is that what shagging is?
Teddy hollered enthusiastically.
What's so fun about it, Dad? Why is it fun?
Lupin decided he had never been so embarrassed in his entire life, but Elizabeth, still under the lollipop influence, continued to do quite wicked things with her hands beneath the robes, and he wasn't about to get up.
Teddy, clear off,
he yelled desperately.
I told you,
Timothy announced smugly to Teddy, and they sauntered off with triumphant expressions. Weezer slunk around the bush next, and Lupin briefly thought of reaching his arm out and strangling him.
Weezer wondered if his filthy mudblood traitor half-human beast of a master needed anything.
He mumbled in a voice so hostile and sullen, it appeared he had been forced to say this at gunpoint.
His master wants him to leave him alone, he shouted,
and Weezer disapparated with a loud crack. Oh my God, Lupin thought furiously. Teddy and Tim are undoubtedly going around the room telling everyone what's going on back here. William's going to come around the bush and try to stun me, and Elizabeth will hate me tomorrow. You're going to ruin any possible chance you ever thought you had with her.
Sorry,
he muttered hastily, sprang up off the couch, and immediately apparated into the kitchen. Rosie jumped when Lupin appeared with a bang right behind her, straightening his robes and sitting down very quickly.
What? You hiding something?
She said irritably.
Why did you sit down so fast?
Never mind that, he hissed. You go watch out for Elizabeth. She's eating one of those damn lollipops George brought, and anyone would be able to seduce her. She's sitting behind that rose bush by the corner fire. Go and sit with her. It'll wear off in 20 minutes.
Rosie did not like this demanding tone of voice, nor being told what to do.
I don't want to,
she replied stubbornly.
Get up out of that chair,
Lupin snarled in a deadly tone,
and do it or I will blow up your entire floor and everything in it.
Fine,
Rosie yelled out and jumped to her feet.
Fine. I don't like you anymore.
I don't like you right now either,
he replied nastily.
Look, it's Draco!
Ron grinned as Timothy sailed past them, keeping his face set in a haughty and pinched-up expression, and Harry turned and shouted with laughter.
You must be quiet, Potter,
Timothy sneered, which only made Harry laugh harder,
or you'll be sorry.
Hermione clapped a hand over her mouth and burst into a torrent of giggles.
Isn't he the cutest thing?
She squealed.
You better shut up. Mudblood!
Timothy hollered with a ferocious glare, and she began shrieking with laughter.
Oh, I can't do any more. It isn't any fun, he yelled delightedly and immediately dropped his character. How could anybody act like that all the time? Well, believe me, he did,
Hermione assured him.
Aren't you Tim, the one that took down Lucius?
Timothy nodded and gave her a cocky grin.
Well, that's wonderful, and to think you're muggle-born too, just like me.
She smiled down at him in a maternal fashion.
Yeah, but Harry says there's a great wizard somewhere in my family,
Timothy replied mysteriously.
I don't know who, but I'm going to find out. I'm a spy. I have spy tapes.
Ron gave him a puzzled look.
Tapes?
Oh, DVDs. Of spy training.
What's a DB whatever?
Ron glanced at Hermione, who smirked in his direction. It was always fun to be around muggles, where Ron would predictably show off his ignorance.
Don't feel bad, Ron. I don't know what a DVD is either,
Harry replied seriously.
Well, I suppose you wouldn't. They weren't invented when you lived with the Dursleys,
Hermione responded in her practical voice.
They're round discs with movies or other video-recorded material on them. A lot more compact than those old VHS tapes.
Amazing! Arthur shouted as he came up behind them. Quentin, that's a snake fella, you know. He's Remus's muggle friend, he said enviously. He was showing me how to do that Velitavision works. You put in one of those DVD things. How do they do it?
Television, Harry, Hermione, and Timothy responded in unison.
Telly, whatever, Arthur said unrepentantly. What's positively astonishing is what it is. He's quite a good fellow. Does a perfect Snape, and he's going to show me his rifler.
Rifle, Timothy replied knowingly. That's fun. You can shoot stuff with it. Whatever you do, don't let my grandpa show you his,
he added with a shudder. He's the one dressed as Dumbledore. Richard, who had required a great deal of persuasion from both his wife and Quentin to agree to dress up at all, now appeared to be having the time of his life. He was decked out in long flowing purple robes and half-moon spectacles, sporting a 4-foot white beard, and appeared quite pleased with himself. He had yet to say anything whatsoever that was in character, but not for want of trying.
"I'm not a Twinkie!" he bellowed loudly at Hagrid, Sybil Trelawney, and Professor Flitwick. "Ginny was quite wrong about that, I say! I tell you, I'm a man's man!"
As soon as Ginny overheard her name, she stomped up to his side.
"What's I wrong about?"
she said irritably, and Trelawney and Flitwick smiled consolingly at her.
"Well now, dear," Sybil began in a soothing voice, "you wouldn't have known. It isn't as if you were gifted with the inner eye, of course."
"You were just a teenager, Ginny. We couldn't include you in the private lives of the grown-ups,"
Flitwick told her seriously.
"Dumbledore wasn't gay? Damn! I said that in an interview." "Well, I'm gay," Flitwick pronounced happily. "You could tell the Muggle press that. I don't care."
Ginny, who obviously hated to be wrong, stormed off with a thunderous expression.
"Poor girl," Sybil sighed sympathetically. "People shouldn't have gotten so angry with her about those books. It's dreadful, you know. She won't make it to 30.
She blew her nose sadly into a beaded handkerchief.
"I read it in her leaves. She's going to die by fire," she sighed tragically. "Aye, Sybil, you'll be killing off all them kids," Hagrid shouted, swaying,
which caused everyone within 10 feet of him to jump quickly to the side. No one wanted to be at the bottom of a fallen Hagrid.
"Who asked you?" Sybil screeched back angrily. "Do you have the inner eye, you great drunken lump?"
"Huh," Hagrid snorted. "If you got that eye, I'll be eating my kettle."
Now, let's not make a fuss,"
Flitwick put in anxiously, but as he only came up to Hagrid's knees, was rather ignored.
"Gilderoy Lockhart,"
Henry announced as he came up to shake their hands.
"Order of Merlin, 3rd degree. "Why, the smarmy devil, you've got it just right," Hagrid shook with laughter. "Won't hear rot or Sybil?"
Sybil suddenly became very interested in straightening out the bangles and beads on her robes.
"Hey, dudes!"
Kenny called out cheerfully as he trotted up behind his brother.
"Like, what's up, super big giant wizard dude?"
he added in a friendly voice to Hagrid. Everyone turned and gave Kenny puzzled looks. Small horns were glued to the top of his bald head, which was adorned with tiny spectacles and a furry pointed beard, and his costume consisted of brown stretch pants with a tail attached to the ass and shoes that rather resembled hooves. He was carrying a lamppost.
"Oh my God!" Henry shouted furiously. "Who in the hell are you supposed to be?"
Lupin, who had just walked up behind them, studied Kenny with an ill-concealed look of disgust.
"I imagine he's meant to be Mr. Tumnus,"
he said irritably.
"Yeah! Mr. Tumnus, dude!" Kenny beamed. "I'm the Fawn, man! Don't you get it?"
"That's the wrong books!" Henry yelled, and everyone burst out laughing.
"It's not, dude!" Kenny wailed furiously. "It's not, man! I was going to be Aslan, dude! But that lion costume was way too hot!"
Lupin and Henry exchanged looks of disgust, but the other three kept on laughing. Kenny, apparently mortally offended, trotted off with a determined expression.
"I'm going to go find some chicks with fat asses, dudes!"
he hollered defiantly over his shoulder. The crack of a gunshot blasting through the night startled all the partygoers. Even the Cupids quit playing their harps and dove hurriedly under the couches.
"Who's that?"
Solange shrieked as she jumped up from a couch.
"Timothy!"
"I'm right here, Mom," Tim yelled back. "Why do you always think it's me?"
"My mom does the same thing," George shrugged. "But I get used to it."
"It's Arthur!" Timothy hollered stubbornly. "He wanted Quentin to show him his hunting rifle!"
Molly, who had been passing by in her continued stalking of Henry, stopped and stared at Timothy with a horrified expression.
"Someone's got Arthur near a gun!"
she shrilled, and Lupin immediately bolted from the room, Solange and the chubby Molly bustling along behind.
"What the bloody fuck, I told Quentin to watch out! Arthur's gonna blow his damn head off!"
Lupin was apparently so distraught he didn't realize he was speaking out loud until Solange began bawling.
Sorry, he said quickly. "It'll be fine. Where are they?"
The three of them rapidly scanned the kitchen as all the other guests hurried in behind them. The sight of Lupin leaping up had set off a good deal of alarm amongst the wizarding folk. The sliding glass door to the patio was open, and just outside the door, Quentin was sprawled on the ground, the front of his shirt covered with blood and his skin ashen, and Arthur was standing over him, nearly in tears.
Sorry, I suppose I wasn't meant to turn round when I pulled that trigger.
He gave Lupin a desperate look.
Remus, help!
He yelled frantically.
Arthur!
Ah! Molly screeched in an exasperated voice. What is wrong with you? You're invited to a muggle party and you shoot the host!
The Deathly Pocketbook reappeared, and she began whacking him about the head and shoulders with it.
You're as bad as Fred and George!
Yeah, Mama, I'm right here.
George scowled as the entire crowd grouped around the bloody scene, Lupin kneeling next to Quentin and shouting for William.
Let me through!
William yelled, and Hagrid picked him up and held him above his head, plowing through the crowd towards Quentin's side.
Quick, healing spell for blood loss!
Lupin yelled as he tore through Quentin's robes with his wand, revealing a blood-squirting bullet hole in his upper left chest. Solange shoved her way hysterically through the mob with Jamie and Rosie right behind her and fell down on her knees by his head, sobbing furiously. Rosie took one look at Quentin and nearly fainted, but was caught by Jamie, who put a shaking arm around her shoulders, and both watched in silence, their faces pale and terrified.
He's gonna die!
Rosie suddenly screamed.
He shot him in the heart! Dad! Dad!
You don't know that, Rosie, Jamie said in a panic-stricken voice. The wizards, they know all about these spells.
So what? They die anyway, Rosie shrieked.
William, who seemed oblivious to all of them, took out his wand and began rapidly tapping on Quentin while muttering out several different healing spells.
Don't leave me, darling, Solange wailed. I can't stand it. I love you.
Several other members of the crowd began crying as well.
It's just like I said, that he hadn't much time left.
Sybil wailed triumphantly.
Setu! I didn't hear you say that!
Hagrid bellowed back.
Be all right, William announced as he leaned back looking exhausted. I'll be okay, Solange. The artery's fixed.
Apparently, this was true, since the bleeding had stopped abruptly and the color returned to Quentin's face.
You saved him!
Rosie screeched dramatically and threw herself at William, knocking him to the ground.
You're the best wizard ever! I love you! I don't even care if you fucked that bitch!
The whole crowd burst out laughing, and Rosie clapped her hand over her mouth in horror.
Well, of course, I didn't do anything with her,
William replied with a grin. I finally did something right, he thought. So happy and pleased with himself, he was afraid he might cry. Maybe Remus is right, and I'm not a total loser.
Bring some butterbeer out here, quick!
Hagrid bellowed, and the house elves quickly thrust large goblets towards Lupin, Rosie, Jamie, and Solange.
That was fucking awesome,
Lupin told William fervently.
Brilliant. You need to be at St. Mungo's working in the casualty ward.
Quentin opened his eyes and looked around blearily.
Sit him up,
William told the crowd, and was pleased when they obeyed him.
Good God,
Quentin said disgustedly, and he looked down at his shredded and bloody robes.
I'm fine, Solange. What the fuck did you do?
He asked Lupin expectantly. Lupin grinned at this.
I didn't have anything to do with it,
he said cheerfully.
It was William. He's always been good with healing spells.
Quentin stared at William, whose cheeks were flaming, with frank astonishment.
Fuck! Who'd have thought it?
Thanks.
He glanced over at Lupin and started smiling.
Who have you been snogging with, Remus?
Solange burst into a gale of giggles, apparently quite relieved.
Remus! You've got a love bite on your neck!
She announced gleefully.
Help! Help, I say! Molly, stop!
Molly was leading Arthur on a merry chase around the yard, still beating at him with the purse, and the gathered crowd burst out laughing.
I never would have believed it, Quentin said dryly as he glanced over at his father-in-law. I've actually found someone who shoots worse than you do, Richard.
It's funny how quickly things can change, Rosie thought happily. Now she was certain this was the best party she'd ever been to. She and William were cuddled up cozily on a love seat beneath a large rose bush, and a particularly beautiful and talented Cupid was playing the harp over their heads while William scattered some rose petals in her vivid pink hair.
Do you like the pink?
She said archly.
I like it, he replied cheerfully. It's something different. But I don't change it for good, he added hastily. What I really like is that skirt.
Oh, please,
she said knowingly.
I guess you'll just like Lupin with the legs thing, too.
Yeah, he grinned. I guess every guy has a thing for some certain part.
He glanced over to the dais where Quentin was dancing with Solange in her fleur imitation wedding dress, which had been plunged scoop-necked at her request.
I'll bet I know what your dad's is, William hissed.
Ew!
Rosie shuddered.
That is gross. No doubt, though.
Both of them looked guilty when Quentin suddenly walked over, looking much improved without the torn and bloodied robes.
And why are you two looking so guilty? He demanded.
We were sort of talking about you, and then you came over.
Rosie stammered out.
Were you? He said impassively. And what were you saying?
Thought I figured you were a boob guy,
William blurted out.
Well, you're right about that,
Quentin replied pleasantly, although I can't say as to why you two would be interested. Both of them began babbling furiously at the same time.
Don't worry about it, he said dismissively, and pulled out a red-ribboned pink box from his pocket and handed it to Rosie. I thought I'd get both my girls presents for Valentine's Day, he said gruffly. Open it up.
I don't need a present, Dad, Rosie shrieked and burst into tears. You're alive. That's all I care about.
She leapt up to hug him, and William smiled. He loved to see her sentimental side.
Stop that bawling, Quentin snapped out impatiently. You want it when you see what it is. Open it up.
What did you get for Mum?
Rosie asked him curiously as she fumbled at the pink wrapping paper.
That's for later, he replied quickly.
Rosie held up a keychain with a couple of keys on it and gave him an expectant look.
Come on, then, he replied, and she and William hurried out the front door,
where Rosie let out a shriek of ecstasy when she spotted a pink Lamborghini parked next to Arthur's enchanted car.
Oh, I love it! Rosie squealed dramatically. I love it! This is just the car I always wanted!
Quentin and William exchanged smiles at this show of enthusiasm.
She's a bit spoiled, Quentin commented nonchalantly, but you've got to admit she's rather cute.
I know that, William replied cheerfully.
She's got to find a way not to make her mad. Ah, don't worry about it. If you do, I'll just ring Arthur up on my Felitone, Quentin smirked, and have him drop by and shoot me again.
This is the best night ever, William thought happily. All my old friends are here. I did something even Remus couldn't do, and Rosie's definitely going to be with me all night. William opened the door and looked in at Rosie, who was adjusting the seat back and forth and admiring the interior.
Your dad's great, Rosie, but I think he's really weird, he said dryly, and Rosie burst out laughing.
Well, that's funny. That's what he always says about you, she replied smugly.
Solange and Fleur had, indeed, hit it off very well, and had spent the better part of an hour conversing in French, finding they had the same taste in clothes and music and several shared interests.
You'll have to come over and visit and meet little Gabrielle. I want to hear the whole story about you and Quentin. It is so romantic. He is almost as handsome as Ville,
Fleur told her happily.
I'd love to, Solange said truthfully. Quentin's a businessman, you know. He wants to hear about Gringotts and how wizards deal with money.
You just can't come the day before full moon, Fleur told her sternly. Billy's always after me all day. I think it has to do with the werewolf thing, but he's too embarrassed to ask Remus.
Solange giggled at this.
Well, you're right. That's just what it is. Poor Remus. He has to lock himself up. I guess Bill just got some of it. Look, what is that?
They were both startled when the lantern lights dimmed further, and a dozen cherubs swooped up around their head. A soft pink light had settled around Solange, just as You Are So Beautiful began playing into the night with unparalleled clarity. Solange let out a gasp.
Fleur!
Lupin appeared and practically dragged her off the couch while Fleur trotted behind him, hissing questions in his ears. The party guests stopped dancing and looked about with interest, and William and Rosie, who had come back inside, exchanged bemused glances as they hurried up next to Lupin and Fleur.
What's going on?
Rosie said curiously. Lupin had an odd smile on his face.
You'll see,
he replied with a smile. Quentin walked around from behind a rose bush, looking absolutely terrified, something Rosie would never have thought possible.
He's going to ask her to marry him,
she squealed out and clapped her hand to her mouth. Honestly, she thought, why didn't I figure it out? Shh, the other three hushed her. Quentin began speaking to Solange very quietly, but since he was down on one knee and had a ring in his hand, it was all rather obvious, and all the female guests began sniffling as tiny bits of gold glitter fell onto them like raindrops.
You're everything I hoped for. You're everything I need. You are so beautiful to me.
Solange promptly burst into tears and threw her arms around his neck, which he apparently took as a yes, since he swung her around a few times and grinned down at her. Professor Flitwick and a small orchestra of house elves burst into a lively rendition of Celestine Warbeck's You've Got Me Under Your Spell, as everyone burst into loud applause, and hundreds of red, pink, and white fireworks exploded happily into the night sky. Oh! Hagrid sobbed loudly into his dirty handkerchief, and Molly burst into tears and put her head on Arthur's shoulder. Apparently, he was now quite forgiven.
Where's Elizabeth? She must be having a stroke,
William yelled out happily as he scanned the crowd.
My God, Rosie, check it out!
He pointed towards Elizabeth, who had come out to a couch near the dais and was sitting blowing her nose. Rosie was so astonished, she immediately ran over to her aunt's side.
Are you happy about this?
She asked, completely flabbergasted.
No, I'm not. I don't know what Snotch is thinking. I've got a cold, that's all.
Elizabeth sniffed.
Oh, ha, Rosie said knowingly. Well, I'm not happy about it,
Elizabeth replied stubbornly.
It's just romantic, that's all.
Rosie gave her a penetrating look. She's sad, she thought to herself. And why wouldn't she be? Look who she's married to. She leaned over and impulsively gave Elizabeth a hug, and then hurried away, only to walk almost straight into Harry Potter.
Hello,
she said quickly and told herself not to stare.
I guess you're Harry. I'm Rosie, you know, William's girlfriend.
Harry grinned at her.
The tox thing is really good. She might have been nurses, but she was pretty hot.
Rosie smiled back at him. The whole night was starting to seem like some crazy dream.
I hope people haven't been bothering you too much. I know what it's like to be famous.
No, it's been great, Harry replied cheerfully. These are all like my favorite people. Well, not Rita Skeeter, he added, and Rosie laughed.
It doesn't bother you to see my brother. He's the one dressed up as your dad. Or Victor? He's got up as serious.
Harry gave her a reassuring look.
Now, Remus asked me about it first. He paused. I thought Tim was your brother. He's my younger brother,
Rosie informed him.
Jamie, he's the one dressed as your dad. I guess because they figured he had the same name and he's tall and has black hair. Anyway, he's my twin.
This, she realized, was the first time she'd actually said this out loud to anyone. And it seemed quite in keeping with the weirdness of the night that it would be Harry Potter.
You've a twin? That's cool,
Harry said enviously, and Rosie reminded herself that he was an only child.
It's okay,
she smiled and realized that, for the moment anyway, she was actually glad she had two brothers.
It's quite lovely,
Luna declared in her serious voice.
I didn't know there were pink diamonds.
The women had all gathered around Solange to admire her ring.
They're very rare. And expensive, Solange said proudly. I can't believe you remembered. It was a really long time ago. I told him I loved pink diamonds.
He remembers everything about you, Mom, Rosie told her sternly.
It is the most beautiful ring ever,
Fleur gushed, her face aglow.
Arthur and I had such a romantic wedding,
Molly sighed.
Well, until he wanted to go to some muggle honeymoon place called Viagra Falls or something.
Hermione and Rosie burst out laughing.
It's Niagara Falls, Molly, Hermione said kindly. I suppose the other might be kind of fitting, though. Maybe a honeymoon place for senior citizens.
She and Rosie exchanged smiles as the rest of the group just looked confused.
I hope someone wants to marry me someday,
Ginny sighed.
I think that boy that's dressed up as Harry's dad is awfully cute.
Rosie gave her a horrified look.
That's my brother, and he's already got a girlfriend. So, he's not married, is he?
Ginny replied triumphantly.
Besides, he likes me. I can tell.
She and Rosie exchanged nasty looks. Bitch, Rosie thought to herself. I'll take the Stepford wife over you.
Ron gave me a ring that was big enough to wear as a bracelet,
Hermione announced, and everyone laughed.
It was huge. I was really mad. I asked him if he thought it had big fat sausage fingers or something. It's a nice ring,
Elizabeth said primly, but Solange appeared touched that she'd even come out with this.
It's a beautiful ring, Lady Fanshawe wailed dramatically. Beautiful, and I'm so happy for you. I've always thought of him like my own son.
You have not,
Solange burst out, and she and Elizabeth and Rosie went off into fits of giggles.
Well, I certainly have, Lady Fanshawe boomed out stridently and turned on Elizabeth. And you'd best not be laughing at me, missy, she shrieked triumphantly, or I'll tell everyone what was going on behind the rose bush.
And I'll tell Dad how jealous you were,
Elizabeth shouted back, her face scarlet. Solange and Rosie exchanged puzzled and interested looks.
Whatever are you two talking about?
Rosie demanded.
Nothing. Mother's imagining things. Aren't you, Mother?
Elizabeth said threateningly.
I suppose, Lady Fanshawe sniffed and gave Elizabeth a murderous look as she stomped away.
Rosie was surprised when Polly raced into the room, apparently having escaped her kennel.
Oh, little dog, she's so cute,
Hermione squealed.
This is my dog, Polly,
Rosie announced proudly, as Ginny, Molly, and Luna began staring at her in fascination.
What's the matter with them?
Rosie hissed irritably to Hermione, but she now had the same look on her face as well.
Why are you all staring at my dog?
Rosie burst out angrily.
She's a very nice dog,
Luna said consolingly in her dreamy voice.
I suppose you didn't know she was an animagus. She's not an animagus, Rosie replied disgustedly. She's a dog and... Polly, stop that!
Polly had been squirming desperately in her arms.
I guess she doesn't want to be outed, Luna told her serenely. That's okay. We don't have to know.
I
want to know, Ginny blurted out rudely. I think she's somebody I know.
Polly jumped out of Rosie's arms and bit Ginny on the wrist.
Polly, stop it! Stop it!
Rosie shrieked with embarrassment.
Ow!
Ginny yelled angrily.
I know her now.
Parate!
Lupin, who had come up behind them, waved his wand at Polly, who immediately became quite still and silent.
You're saying that she's an animagus?
Rosie wailed at him.
Why are they saying that?
Lupin winced at this.
Well, she is, Rosie. It doesn't matter. You can keep her as a dog if that's how you like it. She's quite happy as she is.
Rosie dropped Polly onto the floor with a horrified expression.
Are you saying that she's really a person? I don't want a dog that's a person! Ew! Well, who is she?
Lupin sighed and pointed his wand at Polly.
Show yourself,
he said wearily. Rosie watched in horrified fascination as Polly morphed into Cho, for once rendered completely speechless.
Don't be mad at me, Rosie!
Cho bawled and raced up to her.
I really wanted to be a dog. I was so happy and nobody was bothering me and... You knew?
That's why I saw her with you, Rosie shouted accusingly at William.
Yeah, I just didn't want to tell you. I knew you loved your dog and... Well, she begged me not to,
William said desperately. Anyway, she was always biting me, he said fervently, apparently attempting to focus Rosie's anger on Cho.
Just because I went out with her for a couple months in school, and she was jealous.
Jealous!
Cho screamed.
You thought I was jealous because you were with Rosie. I was jealous because Rosie was with you.
Ginny started giggling.
See? You needn't have been so mean to her,
Luna told Ginny tranquilly.
Now it turns out she's a lesbian. I guess she didn't really want Harry after all.
Harry and William exchanged a horrified look that clearly said, We snogged a lesbian animagus.
Oh my God!
Rosie screamed and sat down on the floor.
She slept in my bed with me!
Yeah, I know just how you feel, Ron burst in helpfully. That's how I felt when I found Scabbers was Peter Pettigrew. Thought I was going to puke.
He made a revolted face.
She slept in my bed, and she was always licking my feet,
Rosie screeched, as the partygoers, who had all imbibed quite a bit of alcoholic beverages and magical chocolate, began snickering amongst themselves.
It isn't funny! It isn't!
The crowd gave up, and everyone except her parents burst out laughing. Hagrid stumbled up to her, wheezing, with tears running down his face.
Oh, it's funny, Rosie, it is. We don't mean none by it. Think you had a little lesbian dog.
She used to watch me get dressed, Rosie wailed furiously. She tried to get in the bathtub with me.
Honey, now even Solange and Quentin were trying not to laugh.
Rosie, please don't be mad at me,
Cho sobbed.
Please, I love you.
She rushed towards her with outstretched arms.
Get the hell away from me,
Rosie screeched and pushed her down, and Ginny started clapping. Lupin apparently was the only one who felt sorry for Cho, since he helped her up and patted her awkwardly on the arm. Cho, to no one's surprise, promptly burst into grateful tears.
It'll be all right, he told her soothingly. You'll find another girlfriend. Hopefully one that's a lesbian as well,
he added helpfully.
She's a freak,
Ginny announced loudly and stuck her tongue out at her, and Lupin shot her a horrible look.
Quit being so damned hateful, he snapped. She can't help who she is. She's been treated very badly because of your books, and thought she'd finally found somewhere she could be happy.
Why are you sticking up for her?
Ginny replied rudely.
I don't like people to be harassed. You know this.
Thank you, Professor Lupin,
Cho screeched.
You were always the nicest one there. You are everybody's favorite teacher.
Lupin looked embarrassed at this, and Hagrid, Trelawney, and Flitwick began muttering angrily to one another.
I had several students who found me to be their especial favorite,
Sybil burst out with many a clanking of baubles.
Always came to my house, didn't they?
Hagrid groused.
Apparently I'm so small the students overlooked me.
Flitwick squeaked.
Well, I never liked him,
Ginny offered up, and Lupin gave her a sour look.
I didn't,
she repeated stubbornly.
You shouldn't have given me dreadful. I never got a D before.
Did you ever complete your bloody homework?
He snarled back.
And I don't believe any of that rubbish about Tonks,
Ginny screamed defiantly.
She was great. She was so cool. She was
naughtier than a fruitcake, Ginny. Shut up, Harry shouted furiously. Don't say another word about him.
You shut up. You're so great.
I do not. Harry and Ginny were nearly nose to nose by now.
Ginny Weasley, that is quite enough. You apologize to Harry and Remus, her mother shouted.
I won't, Ginny yelled, stomped her foot, and disapparated with a loud crack.
I'm going home too, Cho wailed.
I'm sorry, Rosie.
That's okay, Cho,
Rosie mumbled as Cho beamed happily to her, gave Lupin a grateful look, and disappeared herself.
Harry, Remus, we're awfully sorry. She's dreadfully behaved sometimes. Nothing I can do. She's an adult, Arthur burst out apologetically.
Don't worry about it, Harry reassured them.
Rosie thought he was just relieved that Ginny was gone.
It isn't your fault. I think she just had too many older brothers.
Victor had passed out and rolled onto the floor, where everyone kept tripping over him, until Hagrid carried him to a rose bush and stuffed him beneath it. Elizabeth, who had apparently been eating quite a bit of chocolate, didn't appear the least bit upset. She was dancing with Percy Weasley, who seemed entirely smitten with her. Her long black hair was teased and tangled up, and her face happily flushed. Rosie grinned when she passed by them, and then walked over to Lupin, who was looking at Elizabeth rather oddly.
"What's the matter?" she demanded. "Elizabeth's not allowed to dance and have fun?"
"Of course she is."
"Why are you frowning, then?"
"I have a headache," he spat out. "This place is louder than the Great Hall on the last day of school."
Funny, she thought to herself as she looked around for William. I don't think he's being quite truthful. Quentin kept reassuring Arthur he wasn't upset about the shooting, and that he was quite welcome to return, hopefully without the rest of his family, Quentin thought. The mansion crowd was enough to deal with.
"My father-in-law shot me several times, Arthur," he said dryly, and Arthur appeared somewhat reassured.
Quentin frowned at the unexpected sound of a key turning in the front door lock. Who in the hell's got a bloody key? And then, just as the horrifying truth dawned on him, the door burst open, and there in all her glory stood Loretta.
"Oh my goodness,"
Solange whispered happily to Elizabeth.
"She looks terrible."
"She does," Elizabeth agreed fervently. Apparently, Elizabeth thought, Loretta had decided to buy the cheapest makeup she could find and then slather it onto her face with a trowel. Her hair had been raggedly cut into an unflattering chin-length bob and badly permed, giving her frighteningly clownish appearance. Loretta did a complete twirl as she dropped her suitcase, apparently to show off her new dress, a pea-green polyester sack at least 3 sizes too large, and smiled proudly at everyone as if she were a glorious sight to behold.
"I'm home, darling!"
she shrieked ecstatically as she rushed forward and attempted to embrace Quentin, who hastily ducked behind Hagrid.
"Did you miss me?"
The only good thing about the incident, Quentin thought later, was that it did have the desired effect of clearing the room. Everyone suddenly remembered the hour was late, and they had children or magical creatures to attend to, and they began disapparating so quickly the air sounded like popping corn with all the cracks. The party was hastily proclaimed a great success, and everyone wanted to plan another. Later. The Mansionites weren't any help whatsoever. Richard and Lady Fanshawe hurried out of the room at an astonishing speed. Jamie hugged his mother and gave his father a horrified, sympathetic expression before disappearing with Shala. William and Rosie took off for the elevators like a shot, dragging a recalcitrant Timothy and Teddy behind them, and Kenny, Victor, and Henry were all passed out snoring on the floor. The last person Quentin wanted to stay was Elizabeth, but she sat down stubbornly next to Solange, apparently determined not to abandon her. Only Lupin had the loyalty to help him out, Quentin thought. He stood a few feet away from Quentin with a watchful expression, as if standing at his defense.
"Loretta, we didn't know you were coming back," Quentin said in a measured tone.
"I got out early, darling,"
she squealed excitedly.
"Oh, I missed you dreadfully!"
Solange bit her lip, but said nothing, her expression both defiant and unsure. But Lupin gave Loretta a penetrating look.
"Whatever was going on here?"
Loretta burst out petulantly.
"Were you having some sort of costume party? I saw the strangest looking people,"
she announced angrily.
"Quite a bit has happened while you've been away," Quentin told her truthfully. "Quite a bit."
Loretta looked over at Lupin, as if waiting for him to greet her, but he kept watching her intently and said nothing at all. That's odd, Elizabeth thought. It's not like him to be rude, and she does look awfully pathetic.
"Why are you still awake, Solange?"
Loretta whined peevishly.
"You might as well go to bed. My husband and I will be going to bed soon, I'm sure."
This, of course, was too much.
"He isn't your husband anymore,"
Solange shrieked, her fist clenched into balls of rage.
"Not that he ever was. He's going to be my husband, and you had better keep your bloody mouth shut,"
she snarled ferociously.
"Holy fuck,"
Lupin whispered to Elizabeth with a startled expression.
"I've never seen her act like that. She reminds me of She-Wolf."
"A She-Wolf?"
Elizabeth whispered back.
Female werewolf. A feral one. They're scary as hell.
How can you be so mean to me?
Loretta wailed pitifully and burst into tears.
That isn't true, and you know it. You tell her she's lying, Quentin.
Quentin looked so uncomfortable, Lupin wished he could disapparate for him on the spot.
She isn't lying, he said quietly. I didn't want you to find out like this, but you should have called so we could meet in private.
How can it be true? We're married!
Loretta screeched.
I've gotten it annulled, Quentin replied shortly, and I proposed to Solange tonight. I'm sorry if this hurts you, but...
How can you do this to me? I love you!
Loretta wailed and promptly fell onto the floor, a sobbing heap of polyester green and brown frizz. Lupin walked over to Loretta and gave her a disgusted look.
Don't bother with it,
he told her crossly, and then added to the others,
She's lying.
What? Quentin yelled.
She's been putting on ever since she walked into this room, Lupin announced angrily. She doesn't love you. She didn't miss you. And all she wants is everyone's pity.
Are you fucking kidding me? After I felt guilty about this for years, Quentin shouted with a murderous expression.
Well, I don't know about years, Lupin replied thoughtfully. I'm just telling you what I know since she's walked into this room. She's this good a liar, though, and one considers her past violent behavior, he muttered. That definitely falls under the category of protection of others.
What?
Solange said in a baffled voice.
Finding out what she's thinking, he responded firmly and pulled out his wand. Are you going to talk?
He asked Loretta coolly.
No!
Loretta screamed ferociously.
And don't you point that thing at me! I'm not telling anybody anything!
Just as you say, Lupin shrugged. Legilimens!
Loretta let out an angry wail and then appeared to go into some sort of a trance while Lupin stared at her with painful concentration. The other three stood by looking rather awkward, and several minutes of silence passed. Finally, Loretta blinked and sat up, glaring furiously at Lupin.
So, he told her impassively, you've always despised your sisters because you felt you didn't get the attention they did, and you repaid them by pretending to desperately love the man you knew your sister did, and going after the husband of the other when he was too drunk to know what he was doing.
You don't know anything about me,
she hissed wrathfully.
I know everything about you, he replied in a glacial tone and put his wand away. More than you'd want me to repeat.
It's none of your damn business!
It wasn't lost on the other three that Loretta was swearing, and neither stuttering nor bawling.
Certainly it's my business, Lupin responded curtly. You've made Quentin quite unhappy. And you didn't just keep him from the woman he loved. You kept his son from him by convincing him his father hated him.
Loretta jumped to her feet, her eyes maniacal with rage.
I'll kill you!
She shrieked threateningly.
Who are you?
Remus Lupin,
he replied coolly as they began circling one another.
I don't suppose you've read the books,
he added mockingly.
Yes, I've read those books,
Loretta snarled.
And Lupin dies in the books.
Apparently not all of the information was correct, he said politely. Rather awful for you, isn't it?
Loretta looked at him a moment longer.
I knew you before, she said triumphantly. You used to come around here a long time ago.
I'm Victor and William's uncle, he replied shortly.
That's right,
she continued scornfully.
You and Victor always talked to Elizabeth and Solange, but you never paid any attention to me.
That is just so fucking sad, Lupin yawned. I may actually break down and cry.
I know something about you anyway,
Loretta shouted heatedly, and he raised an eyebrow.
Do you?
You're a werewolf,
she screamed triumphantly.
Loretta, we know that,
Elizabeth responded dryly.
You shouldn't have let him come and visit us, Quentin,
Loretta wailed.
You don't know anything about him. He's a terrible, evil, crazy person.
Is he? Quentin said in his dangerous voice, and Loretta jumped back a bit. You think I don't know him?
You've only met him once.
Quentin and Lupin exchanged a smile.
Quentin knows me better than anyone, Lupin told her pleasantly. Better try another angle.
Get out of my house!
Loretta screamed.
I live here now, he replied coldly, and I'll leave when Quentin asks me to. I can't say as I'm concerned about your opinion.
You're not even human!
Loretta screeched spitefully.
You're a beast and a monster!
You shut up, Loretta! Elizabeth screamed and leapt to her feet.
You're a crazy, hateful bitch!
Quentin and Solange looked rather surprised at this, but when Loretta staggered to her feet and rushed at Elizabeth, Quentin stepped between them.
You touch me and I'll call the police!
Loretta screeched with a crazed glare.
And I'll tell Jamie! He believes everything I tell him about you!
She added exultantly.
Go ahead and tell him then, Jamie said as he stepped into the room, his voice shaking slightly. I thought I'd better see if things were okay, Dad. Sorry I left, he added with a nasty look in Loretta's direction.
That's quite all right, Quentin replied quickly. How long have you been listening to the door?
Long enough, he replied bluntly and stared at Loretta. Did you even care that you were hurting me?
You're always telling me Dad hates me, he shouted.
She told you what?
Quentin yelled, and Loretta, obviously feeling surrounded, began bawling again.
Yeah, Jamie said venomously. She was always telling me your father says he hates you and he wishes you hadn't ever been born.
Why didn't you tell me this?
Quentin asked Jamie in a hoarse voice, and he looked at the floor.
Don't know. I was ashamed, I guess. I used to believe it. I mean, I was really bad, and I thought I deserved it.
She's a fucking liar,
Quentin spat out wrathfully.
I know it, Jamie gave her a disgusted glance. Honestly, do you think I was so stupid I'd never figure it out? Even before this thing happened, I started thinking you lied to me, and Shala said the same thing. We know if you have kids and you love them, you aren't going to let them do whatever they want and act so horribly they grow up without ever having any friends at all.
No, I just wanted to make you happy,
Loretta whined.
Because I love you.
You didn't love me enough to discipline me, Jamie replied heatedly. You didn't care that I hadn't any relationship with my father or anybody else because you wanted it that way. That isn't love, he finished fiercely. And I'm bloody well glad you're not really my mom because my mom knows what love is.
He stalked out of the room and slammed the door behind him.
Damn,
Lupin said finally.
Who'd have thought it? Well, I suppose Jamie's taking care of the matter quite nicely.
I'm going to kill all of you!
Loretta squealed maniacally and ran out of the room.
Well,
Elizabeth said in her practical voice,
I don't know about the rest of you, but I'm terribly frightened.
Quentin actually smiled at her.
You should be, he replied sardonically. I'm rather terrified myself.
I'm never going to go to sleep tonight,
Lupin announced cheerfully.
I'll have to sit up and watch the door.
Solange suddenly burst into tears.
Honey, are you okay?
Quentin asked her worriedly.
I'm fine,
Solange bawled and smiled through her tears.
I'm happy. That's why I'm crying. I can't believe what Jamie said,
she sobbed.
I thought this was the most perfect day I'd ever had. And now I've got my son back, too.
Her voice trailed off into a high-pitched squeak.
Sweetheart, Quentin shifted his weight and looked uncomfortable. I shouldn't know this meant so much to you. You've never talked about him much, you know.
That's because I couldn't,
Solange said fiercely.
I couldn't.
Now Elizabeth had tears in her eyes as well.
Look, Lupin said awkwardly and turned to walk off. I'll leave you all alone.
Wait up a bit, will you? Quentin asked him as they went into the kitchen.
Thank you for staying, he told him seriously. If you hadn't, I wouldn't have ever known. I'd be damned happy not to feel guilty about that bitch any longer. It's going to help Jamie and Solange as well, he finished gruffly.
No need to thank me,
Lupin smiled.
Albus always said the truth will out, you know.
Pretty wise fellow, Quentin gave him a scrutinizing look. Tim and Teddy are spreading some interesting rumors about you.
Are they?
They are,
he replied with a smirk.
What's the deal?
Nothing,
Lupin said impatiently.
Don't worry about it.
Oh, I don't give a shit, Quentin yawned. Don't be embarrassed about it. She is an attractive woman, he said grudgingly, even if she is a fucking bitch.
Lupin sprang forward and punched Quentin in the face.
What the fuck?
Quentin yelled, and Solange and Elizabeth burst into the room, exchanging incredulous glances.
Don't hit him back,
Solange wailed desperately.
You two are best friends, and you know it.
Quentin looked at Lupin, who was staring at him defiantly.
I'm not going to hit him back,
he said finally.
Well, perhaps I was out of line, Remus,
he added quietly.
It's not as if you ever told me.
Why would I have told you?
He responded rudely.
What in the world are they both talking about?
Elizabeth hissed.
I haven't any idea. They're both crazy,
Solange whispered back.
I suppose you've a point, Quentin replied impassively.
Rather an eventful party, I...
Not so much as it could have been,
Lupin said calmly and stalked past Solange and Elizabeth without saying a word. Elizabeth hesitated a moment and then followed him to the elevator.
What is wrong with you?
She said sharply, but was horrified when tears sprang up in her eyes.
Are you mad at me? No, sorry,
he replied with an apologetic expression.
Well, I'm not mad at you. It's got to do with you, but I haven't any reason to be upset,
he continued as if speaking to himself.
"What in the world are you talking about?" Elizabeth wailed. "You tell me what I did!"
"I didn't like you dancing with Percy Weasley,"
Lupin blurted out.
"And you didn't tell me it's none of my business, because I know that."
The elevator door opened, and Teddy bounced out.
"I'm tired, Dad. I want to go to bed."
"Go sleep with Tim,"
Lupin said immediately.
"He wants you,"
Elizabeth said sternly.
"And it's late."
"Right, I get the message."
"Sorry,"
Lupin mumbled in an unrepentant voice.
"We'll go on, then."
There was a moment of tense silence. "Well, what am I to say?" Elizabeth thought angrily. "Don't leave me alone. Come and jump on me whenever you want, even though you never said a single word about still caring for me." Elizabeth turned away so she would not have to look at him again.
"Quentin,"
Solange said sweetly into the darkness of their bedroom,
"can you really believe that after all these years, we'll actually be married?"
"Absolutely," he replied and kissed her for a long time. "Some things are just meant to be."